From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. Climate change is already affecting the way Iowans live, work, and play. That's according to a new report by researchers at Iowa's public universities. This hour, we'll talk with climate experts at Iowa State University, the University of Northern Iowa, and the University of Iowa. We'll hear how farming practices and flood mitigation efforts are changing, also the consequences of warmer winters and longer growing seasons. We'll also find out how attitudes about climate change are changing, and ask how moves to reduce greenhouse gases are likely to fare with the post-midterm political shift to the right. A look at how climate change is already affecting Iowa. After this news. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Climate change is already affecting the way Iowans live, work, and play. That's according to a new report by researchers at Iowa's public universities. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. And this hour, we'll get details about the report from Iowa's climate experts. We'll learn how farming practices and flood mitigation efforts are changing, also the consequences of warmer winters and longer growing seasons. Later in the hour, we'll find out how attitudes about climate change are changing and ask how moves to reduce greenhouse gases are likely to fare with the post-midterm political shift to the right. Joining me first of all for the entire hour, three experts who were involved in creating this new report. Jerry Schnorr is with us, professor of engineering at the University of Iowa, also co-director of the Center for Global and Regional Environmental Research in our Iowa City studio. Jerry Schnorr, welcome back to our program.
Thanks, Ben. Nice to be here.
Gene Talkley is with us, professor of atmospheric science at Iowa State University, also director of Climate Science Initiative at Iowa State. He joins us from our Ames studio. Gene Talkley, welcome back.
Thank you for inviting me.
Laura Jackson is with us, professor of biology at the University of Northern Iowa, joining us from our Iowa Public Radio studios in Cedar Falls. Laura, welcome to our program.
Thank you.
Let me start off with Jerry Schnorr. Jerry, you write in the introduction of the executive summary of this piece, quote, "Today, perhaps without their realization, Iowans are factoring climate change into their lives and activities." Summarize a couple of things for us in that sentence. How is Iowa's climate changing, and how are Iowans factoring it into their lives and activities?
I think that our changes are occurring both wittingly and unwittingly. In some cases, people are responding to climate change unknowingly. For example, farmers may not realize that the growing season has become longer, but they're planting their crops earlier than they used to. Cities may not realize that winters have become somewhat warmer, but also perhaps slushier and icier, but it affects their budgets and how much road salt they need to include or even road repairs. Many of the citizens in Iowa are enjoying less cooling in the summer. They have to run their air conditioners less than they used to because, surprisingly, our summer high temperatures have become lower. But on the other hand, our winter temperatures have become milder, and we're also enjoying lower heating in the wintertime. One other manifestation of the way that Iowa's climate is changing is it's much more humid. There's more moisture around, so nighttime temperatures have become warmer overall. Mainly our winters have become warmer, and our evenings have become warmer than, say, a few decades ago.
We want to reach out to our listeners because perhaps this brings to mind something. If you're a farmer or if you're someone else who pays a lot of attention to the climate, perhaps you've been unknowingly or knowingly factoring climate change into your life. We'd like to hear from you this hour, 1-866-780-9100. Are you factoring climate change into your life, your activities, as this new report claims? 1-866-780-9100. Our email, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Twitter at IPR Talk. Of course, your questions or concerns about climate change in Iowa are welcome as well. Jerry, to continue with you for a moment, give us some context. Remind us of the context that prompted this report It was put in motion by the Iowa legislature and Governor Culver initially in 2007 and then approved in 2009, I believe, correct?
Well, there were actually two reports that were mandated by the General Assembly and by Governor Culver. The first was a climate change advisory council, which recommended ways that we could reduce our emissions in Iowa. And that came out about January 1st, 2008. Now, 2 years later, we have a second report on, well, exactly what are the climate change impacts in Iowa? And I think following the floods in 2008, the legislature, the General Assembly, wanted to know, really, what are we facing here? And that's what this report is all about.
Okay, to size that up and to also give some recommendations, which we will get to in a few minutes. I want to turn to Gene Talkley, professor of atmospheric science and director of the Climate Science Initiative at Iowa State University. Now the report, part of which you authored this executive summary, Gene, indicates that the current state climate changes are linked in a very complex way to global climate change. Tell us how Iowa's climate and the changes the globe is going through are linked together.
Well, it's clear that our nighttime temperatures are going up, for instance, and this is one of the factors that leads to that is increase in greenhouse gases, because these greenhouse gases trap more heat near the surface of the Earth. So both our rising nighttime temperatures and rising winter temperatures are consistent with patterns that are going on globally.
Mm-hmm. And what is the scope of time that we're talking about? When we say we see these trends, how many years are we looking back?
We have now a good 30-year record. Well, our Iowa data go back over 100 years, but we see these trends pretty consistent over the last 30 to 40 years.
Mm-hmm. Because, you know, putting on my skeptic's hat, we could say that extreme events in precipitation, in temperature, are a part of sort of fluctuations in our global patterns of weather. Could we not, Gene?
Extremes certainly are a part of normal climate. There's no question. The question, however, is whether the rate of change of these extremes is normal. And when we see, for instance, that the nighttime temperatures are going up much faster than the daytime temperatures, then the extremes are not uniformly distributed. And the extreme events that lead to flooding, for instance, have increased very dramatically by factors of 4 to 7 in Iowa. So those are beyond the range of natural variability.
Mm-hmm. And so when we specifically talk about precipitation, how much of an increase have we seen in precipitation in recent years in Iowa?
Well, the actual increase in the annual total precipitation is relatively modest, maybe less than 10%. But it's the number of events over that are producing rain over an inch and a quarter that have us concerned, because Iowa soils will hold about an inch and a quarter of rain. But beyond that, rain beyond that, 4 and 5 inch rains lead to excessive runoff, and runoff, of course, leads to flooding. Mm-hmm. So it's we're looking carefully at the number of events that are daily, where the daily total is over an inch and a quarter.
Mm-hmm. Now, also in the report, I saw that there are definitely floods are a negative impact of the change that we're seeing to our climate here in Iowa. But you do point out some favorable changes for Iowa. Gene, can you point to one or two of those?
Certainly, the longer growing season is advantageous. Farmers can plant longer. The more moisture that we have allow for farmers to plant very high densities of corn, 30 to 35,000 plants per acre, which would not be possible if we had a much drier climate.
Mm-hmm. We want to hear from our listeners this hour. What are your questions, your concerns about climate change in Iowa? Are you factoring climate change into your life or activities? 1-866-780-9100 or The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Twitter at IPR Talk. About 1 in 5 Americans, I was interested to read, say global warming is not a problem. We'll hear more about that when we look at attitudes towards climate change. 1 in 5 Americans say it's not a problem. If you're one of these people, one of the skeptics of the of climate change, believing in this, tell us why. 1-866-780-9100. And When you size this up, Gene Talkley, when you size up the positives and the negatives that seem to be heading our way, that are developing, what do you get on balance?
Well, of course, there are winners and losers. And for people who are been exposed to extreme and recurring flooding, they'll say that we're already seeing negatives. If we look at the agricultural economy, I think it's been a positive. And there are some who point to at least part of the yield increases in the last 15 years to the impact of climate change.
Okay. Laura Jackson, you've been sitting by listening to this discussion, professor of biology at the University of Northern Iowa. Now, let's turn to focus on your specialty, species, be they plant or animal species. The report indicates climate changes will force native plants and animals, including fish and game species, to adapt or move. Now, is this something we're seeing already?
Yes, it is. There's a number of studies from all over the world, really, that are tracking the movement of species north from where they used to live. They're tracking earlier arrivals of birds into an area on the order of 2 to 3 days earlier per decade. So that might seem a little gradual and slow, but it adds up over the years. And then earlier flowering of plants like the lilac bush that we're all familiar with. The Arbor Day Foundation the last few years has moved its hardiness map and changed it to reflect the fact that we can grow species of shrubs and trees and ornamentals here that we didn't used to be able to grow.
Can you give us an example of that for gardeners out there, for instance?
I don't have a specific example. Their hardiness zone map, though, is available on their website, and it shows the old hardiness zone and the new hardiness zone, and mm-hmm. it's quite a dramatic change.
Okay. Perhaps there are some gardeners, people who are interested in horticulture, who want to share a way that they've experienced the climate change over the past decade of gardening or whatever you do. 1-866-780-9100, the exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Laura Jackson, could some species disappear from Iowa due to these changes?
It's possible. We have one example from our river systems, the wood turtle, which is endangered in our state and not doing so well in a lot of other states, but it lays its eggs in the summer along rivers and sandbars, and that used to be a safe time of year to lay eggs, but now with our increased summertime flooding, as opposed to the earlier pattern of spring flooding, those nests are getting washed out or just being inundated and effectively drowning those baby turtles before they can hatch. So we think we're seeing something where we're not those eggs aren't hatching, and therefore they're not replacing the aging turtles. So mm-hmm. it's an aging population with no juvenile turtles.
Mm-hmm. What decides whether a species, be it turtles or another species, whether it will adapt or move? Who makes that decision?
I think they do. animals live outside, so they kind of have to deal with the climate that they're given. And they, of course, have a lot of ways that they can adapt internally with their behavior and so forth. But there are limits, and there's a long evolutionary history of animals and plants shifting their ranges north or south, depending on the global climate, and they will do that again. The difference now is that they've got to cross roads and farm fields to move, and mm-hmm. and that's a little harder than it would have been, 12,000 years ago when the last glaciation was disappearing.
1-866-780-9100, the exchange at iowapublicradio.org to talk about your concerns, your questions about climate change, how it's affecting our state, the Midwest. Jerry Schnorr with us, Gene Talkley, and Laura Jackson, you just heard there. Let's go to Danielle in Woodward. Hi, Danielle. What's on your mind as you listen to this conversation?
Well, I have great concerns about maintaining ecological integrity of our landscape. I'm not as sanguine as everyone else about agriculture. I think agriculture is a contributing factor to the biological cascades that are happening on the landscape. I'd like Dr. Jackson to respond to her take on the resiliency of prairie ecosystems to absorb additional water. I am seeing prairie plants manifesting in different configurations. A dry prairie that we have been restoring since 04 is now changing in species composition, and I think it has to do with more moisture.
Mm-hmm. So we're seeing prairie, the native makeup of Iowa, reacting to this climate change as well. Is that right, Laura Jackson?
Well, it could very well be. I mean, that's kind of the beauty of diversity when you have a lot of species of plants growing in one place and the climate or the local weather over short term changes, then those species that are better adapted to that site will get bigger and expand. So it kind of creates a sort of level of resilience where if there are many different species that have different responses to dry weather, wet weather, cold, warm, mm-hmm. they'll change and respond.
And we know that native prairie species are highly resilient due to their very long root system, correct?
That's right. They're holding the soil. They're building organic matter in the soil. They're creating a soil that's more absorptive of moisture and keeps those nutrients in the topsoil rather than allowing them to leach down through the topsoil into the subsoil where the roots can't get at it. So they're performing a number of ecosystem services that can help us to withstand these heavy rainfall events, keep the soil in place and productive for the future.
Mm-hmm. Danielle, did that get to the heart of your question?
It does to a certain extent. I think we need more prairie, not less. I think we need to maintain absolutely all the remnants and try to add more reconstructions because we have essentially failed in our determination to control flooding through hardscape, mm-hmm. through riprap and channelization and piping. It just doesn't work. A more resilient landscape, I think, will manifest in prairie. Wouldn't it be neat if the Farm Bill tied subsidies to farmers based on what scientists believe would be an appropriate percentage of the land to be restored or reconstructed to native vegetation.
Danielle, thank you very much.
Thank you.
For your question, your comments. Danielle joining us from Woodward, 1-866-780-9100, The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Danielle's comment brings up another question. I'm wondering about, since Iowa's landscape, I believe, is the most drastically changed landscape of all 50 states, 99% of Iowa's landscape has been changed from native prairie to what it is today, agriculture. How do we separate changes caused by climate change that you're reporting about in this report compared to in regards to flooding, for instance? We've paved over so much, and the landscape can't get rid of the water the way it has. So, Jerry Schnorr, how do we separate those things, all the other factors that could be contributing to flooding, not just climate change?
You raise a good point, Ben, and certainly both are contributing to this increase in runoff and flooding that we're seeing in our state's rivers. The way that we have channelized, as our caller mentioned, our rivers and added tile and so forth runs water very much more quickly down and out through the system, which causes flooding in downstream locations and cities. And that's probably the greatest socioeconomic manifestation of what we're seeing to humans, to people in Iowa, and that is the risk of flooding and the damages created by flooding, and those are well documented in our report. So because the landscape can hold less water, and we've, instead of slowing it down, rather we've sped it up, because of that, it certainly adds to that 10% increase in precipitation that we're seeing through the last 100 years that Gene Tockley mentioned. It manifests itself as maybe a 20% or more increase in our river flow, and even more importantly, the severe events, for example, those even over 4 inches in a single day, which were almost unheard of 100 years ago, have become much more frequent in Iowa and the Midwest and also the northeastern part of the United States. And those are well documented in our record.
Talking about climate change today, specifically how it's affecting the Midwest and Iowa, join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Perhaps you've noticed it in your personal life. Kelly is joining us from Iowa City. Welcome to our program, Kelly.
Hi, this is Kelly from Iowa City. And so far, the discussion has seemed fairly cheery on this subject, but my understanding is that the predictions globally are pretty dire for the future. And so I was wondering, you know, I have a one-year-old. I'm very concerned about what the planet's going to look like for her lifetime. And so I was wondering specifically what the predictions are for Iowa for the next 40 to 80 years and what we can do to slow global climate change in Iowa.
Excellent. Kelly, thank you for your call. Let's spin it out a few decades down the road. Jerry, Jean, Laura, what can you tell us about when Kelly's grandson, son, will be adults?
Let's start with Jean.
Okay.
We have looked at, we've done studies of the climate of the 2040s to 2070s, and more studies are ongoing. But these seem to show that rainfall would continue to increase. And at about the rate that is now we're now observing, but that there would probably be periods of drought interspersing these extreme rain events. Temperatures will continue to rise. Humidity levels will probably continue to rise. The growing season will subsequently lengthen. It will be much more of a challenge to manage our landscapes and our economy under this kind of a climate.
Laura Jackson, what do you see as far as the species, animal and plant species that inhabit Iowa right now in that length of time, half century?
Yeah, really difficult to predict. There's so many interactions between species that, you know, say a new disease comes up and just wipes out something that's very common. Really hard to predict those sorts of interactions, but the obvious thing is the species continuing to try to move north, move their ranges north, and new species coming into the state from the south that we haven't seen before and don't really have any experience with. One projection that involves using climate models to try to project into the future says that we would have a winter like north central Kansas and a summer like northern Louisiana. Well, there is no such climate. There is no such place on the earth that has that climate right now. So how can you predict when there's no analog?
Okay, we have to take a short break. Laura Jackson is with us, a professor of biology at the University of Northern Iowa, as well as Jerry Schnorr, Jean Talkley, talking about climate change, a new report saying how climate change is already affecting Iowa, and how Iowans are already adapting to it, changing. If you're one of these, 1-866-780-9100 to get in on our conversation. Another Laura in Mount Vernon has emailed us. She says, I'm a vegetable farmer, and I have all kinds of evidence of climate change. The droughts are drier, the bugs are buggier, the storms are stormier, and the hot is hotter. These events are less predictable and more extreme than they used to be. Laura from Mount Vernon, thank you for that comment. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org is our email to get in touch with us this hour. When we come back, we'll talk about recommendations from this report, also attitudes toward climate change. How are they changing? This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and today we're talking about climate change, how it is already affecting the way Iowans live, work, and play. That's according to a new report by researchers at the state's public universities. And talking in our first half hour about how farming practices have been changing, flood mitigation efforts are changing. The consequences of warmer winters, longer growing seasons, some of these negative changes, some positive, as in some cases for Iowa's agriculture. We're also reaching out to you, our listeners, this hour to find out how perhaps up to this point you haven't thought about it, but how you're factoring climate change into your life or activities, as this new report claims. Perhaps you're one of the Americans who say global warming, climate change, not a problem for me. I don't care about it. Tell us your reasoning. Tell us what's behind that opinion. 1-866-780-9100, The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org is our email. And joining us this hour, three experts who were involved in creating the new report: Jerry Schnorr, an environmental researcher, professor of engineering at the University of Iowa, also co-director of the Center for Global and Regional Environmental Research; Gene Tockley, professor of atmospheric science at Iowa State University, as well as its director of Climate Science Initiative; and Laura Jackson, professor of biology at the University of Northern Iowa in Cedar Falls. Let's pick up with another part of the report. If I can turn to you, Jerry, first of all, you've outlined what this report has done in terms of tracking the changes, tracking people's adaptations to the changes that have been occurring over recent decades. What are the actions that are recommended by this report?
We had about seven recommendations. Perhaps the first and foremost one has to do with considering funding for responding to flooding, for example, in our infrastructure, our cities and our towns. That includes hardening facilities, meaning water and wastewater plants, ensuring that pumps are not in low-lying areas, transformers and capacitors are raised up, highways and bridges are strengthened. And this is sort of obvious, and it's already going on. Certainly Des Moines, after the 93 floods, improved their infrastructure, and Cedar Rapids and Waterloo now after the 2008, and Ames after 2010. We are learning our lessons, but we point out that more of that needs to be done. Secondly, we need to protect our soil, water quality, and agricultural productivity, because the intensity of these rain events is washing much more soil and nutrients and pesticides off the land. And perhaps we can do that by restoring more prairies, as was mentioned earlier, wetlands, buffer strips to the landscape, and so forth. Maybe a third one that the listeners might be interested in have to do with our health. We're concerned about more allergens, which are prevalent now in recent decades, and especially asthma, reactions to mold and so forth, as well as we should be reporting on this increase in disease and what to do about it, for example, childhood asthma. Mm-hmm. And lastly, perhaps the insurance division of Iowa needs to think about how do we help insure people and what are the risks that they're facing in the future of these projected climates.
It seems like these recommendations, perhaps I missed something, they're all having to do with adaptation.
Yes.
Not the train is a-coming, and we're not talking about stopping the train. We're not talking about slowing down the train with these recommendations, are we?
I think you're right, Ben. This report is largely about adaptation. Previous report was about so-called mitigation, that is trying to decrease our greenhouse gas emissions. But obviously, Iowa, we are just a small part of the total emission story. We can improve our economy by also reducing our emissions. And that point is made in the report that really mitigation is needed as well as adaptation.
Gene Tockley, is there the political will to carry through with the recommendations in this report?
I don't see it at the moment. I think we aren't convinced as a society that it's really in our best economic interest to do that. And so it's we're not – I don't think the general public is really paying attention to what the best available science has to say.
Let's go to Stephen in Bloomfield joining our discussion. What's on your mind, Stephen? Stephen, are you there?
Oh.
Yes, and we can hear you now, Stephen. Thanks for joining us.
Good. Yeah, you bet. Hi, I had a comment. You know, anecdotally, I haven't lived in Iowa terribly long, but in my decade here, things, you know, seem to be more temperate than I had expected them to be. I'm from the Pacific Northwest, and we're not approaching anywhere near that in terms of the kind of rainfall that we get, but it seems to me that there are some changes. The things that concern me are two. Number one, that this isn't just some benign global evolution that's happening. The Earth isn't tilting off its axis. We're causing this. It's our species. And the rate of change is only increasing as some of the larger economies in the world, especially China, begin to live the way that we have lived for years. So that concerns me much. Also, that over the last decade, the science behind global warming has been politicized so much, and we've chosen bad science to justify our economic decision.
Mm-hmm. What would the consequences be of not doing anything about global warming, or not doing anything significant in terms of stemming greenhouse gases? What is the worst case scenario in terms of the change that our climate will go through, Gene Talkley?
Well, we've done a lot of studies on this, and it's likely that temperatures worldwide could could increase by up to 6 degrees Celsius. That's 10 degrees Fahrenheit, and that would be dramatic. That's a good share of the change in temperature that the planet has gone through since we've come out of the last ice age. So there would be large fractions of the planet that would be uninhabitable because of the extreme high temperatures. And sea level would rise substantially, probably cataclysmically, if we should get a melting of the West Antarctic ice sheet, which would raise sea levels by 20 feet or more.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned you didn't see the political will to carry through with some of these steps, which have actually to do with adaptation and seem to be in our own best interest and not really in steps to mitigate or stop any sort of the changes and the greenhouse gases. Many conservatives in Congress are turning against the science behind climate change. They are so-called climate change deniers, saying it's caused by perhaps sunspot activity or it's just a natural cycle in the Earth's climate. What do you have to say to that kind of attitude, Laura Jackson, when you are dealing with species and seeing plants adapting?
Well, yeah, the plants and animals are going to – they don't need any convincing. They're just going to move. So that's in terms of these attitudes, I do want to emphasize that this report, like other scientific studies, follows a protocol. We have very strict standards about what we will use in citing research. It's only research that's been through a very careful process of scrutiny through many different filters. Many different sets of eyes have to read these articles and look at the data and question whether the data actually supports the conclusions that are drawn. So it's kind of a big pyramid. You know, our study is standing on the shoulders of hundreds and hundreds of other very carefully done studies that have passed through this peer review process. And, it's better than going back to the dark ages where you just had to rely on a king or somebody to tell you what's true and how things work. And scientific method isn't perfect. It's still human beings doing it, but it's a heck of a lot better than picking through sheep entrails.
Laura Jackson, professor of biology at the University of Northern Iowa, with us, along with Gene Talkley of Iowa State University and environmental researcher Jerry Schnorr of Iowa University of Iowa. We want to finish up this hour by talking about our attitudes towards global climate change, how they are changing. Joining us now by phone, Leah Christian, senior researcher at the Pew Research Center for People and the Press. Leah, welcome to our program.
Thank you, Ben.
You last measured views at the Pew Research Center about the existence and the causes of global warming back in October. Summarize, what did you find?
At that time, we found that a majority of Americans, 59%, still think that there is solid evidence that the average temperature on Earth has been getting warmer over the past few decades. And that was about what we found in October of 2009 as well, but was considerably lower than what we had found from 2006 to 2008. There was far more of the public believed that there was solid evidence that the Earth was warming.
Mm-hmm. Far fewer people, about a third, say global warming is occurring mostly because of human activity. But this is also a little changed in the last survey, right?
Right. So as you said, about a third said that the warming is actually caused by human actions, such as burning fossil fuels. That was, again, about what we found in October of 2009. But still, from 2006 to 2008, about half of the public thought that global warming was happening and it was because of human activity.
Mm-hmm. All this hour, we've been talking about climate change, preferring that terminology. But I noticed in your survey, you're talking about global warming. Why did you choose global warming and not climate change?
Our questions were developed in 2006. It's the first time we started asking them. And at that time, much of the language was much more focused around global warming. And we haven't wanted to change the wording of our questions for fear that those changes might affect the evidence that we find, and that a change over time could be due to a change in wording as opposed to an actual real change. And our sort of basic question doesn't actually even say global warming in it. It just says, from what you've read and heard, is there solid evidence that the average temperature on Earth has been getting warmer over the past few decades or not?
Mm-hmm. When you look at these numbers, can you tell us anything about how the public's view about global warming, climate change, when a third roughly say it's occurring mostly because of human activity, how that matches up with the view in the scientific community?
Yes, actually, in 2009, we did a poll of scientists, members of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, and found, among scientists, this view is much more widespread, of course. Far more scientists think that, the Earth is getting warmer and that it's because of human activity. And so we found a huge disparity between what scientists thought, again, that was in sort of the spring of 2009, and what the public thought at that time.
Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on why there's this huge disparity instead of more of a mirroring between scientists and the general public?
Well, I think one thing we do know is that global warming has become a political issue. And, even starting in 2006, when we first started measuring it, there were differences in opinion, bipartisan identification, and that has continued and even grown slightly in recent years. So there are strong differences between Democrats and Republicans in views about global warming.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little, because it's not reflected when we look back just a year, but in 2006, according to your surveys, far more Americans said there was solid evidence that the average temperature had been rising over the past decades. In July of 2006, according to your information, 79% believed there was this evidence of global warming. Half said it was mostly caused by human activity. Now we're down significantly. The number of global warming skeptics is significantly higher. What can you say about when exactly and why there was this shift in opinion?
We saw it from about the spring of 2008 to when we re-asked the questions in October of 2009. Those are the two data points that we have. So there was a little gap there, of about a year and a half. So we don't know exactly when in that time frame of a year and a half that they changed, but it was definitely in that sort of late 2008, early 2009 period. And I'll mention it was even before some of the controversies over some of the research and some of the other controversies that have been raised, in the media and political environment since then. So our October 2009, data, that survey was in the field well before much of that controversy, and we had already seen that decline in belief and that the Earth was warming.
Is this where we saw the divergence or even a greater divergence and a partisan divide develop? How are Democrats, for example, likely to think about this compared to Republicans?
Yeah, Democrats of course, are far more likely to say that the Earth is warming and that it is caused by human activity. So in our most recent numbers, 79% of Democrats said that the Earth was warming, and just over half, 53%, said that was because of human activity. Among Republicans, those numbers are far lower. 38% think that the Earth is warming. Only 16% think it is due to human activity.
Mm-hmm. What about the Tea Party? Tea Party Republican voters.
Excuse me. We did find a difference in our most recent poll in October. It was the only time we had asked a Tea Party question with the global warming questions. But we found that those Republicans who agree with the Tea Party were significantly less likely to think the Earth was warming, and particularly significantly less likely to think that it was warming because of human activity.
Also, I think in your data it shows that Tea Party activists, voters, believe there is no scientific consensus that the Earth is getting warmer because of human activity. And your data shows clearly among scientists there is this consensus.
Right. Among scientists, there is, and even among the public, 44%. But basically, the public is divided whether they think scientists agree that the Earth is getting warmer because of human activity. But that number drops to only 19% among Tea Party Republicans. So only 19% of Republicans who agree with the Tea Party movement actually think that scientists agree that the Earth is getting warmer because of human activity.
Let me reach out quickly to our other guests, and because they are all scientists. What is the consensus or to what degree is there a consensus about global warming, about climate change, and that our human activity is to blame?
I think among my colleagues that I meet at national meetings regarding the environment and climate, it's you're very hard pressed to find anyone who doesn't believe that this is a serious problem. There is differences in opinion on what we should do to respond to it, but the vast majority of scientists feel that warming is real and that it's due to humans.
Mm-hmm. Leah Christian, I was interested to see that the polling on global warming reflects a partisan divide over the wider issue of energy policy, which you've also done surveys about. Tell us about that.
Okay. Yeah. In general, we've actually found that the sort of partisan gap on just views about energy policy has widened in recent years, and the same is true for just largely for environmental issues more broadly. But in terms of some specifics, when it comes to specific energy policies like requiring better fuel efficiency for vehicles or funding for mass transit, on some of those items you see a small partisan divide, but on many you see quite a large difference with, Republicans are less likely to support requiring better fuel efficiency for cars, trucks, and SUVs than Democrats, less likely than Democrats to even support federal funding for alternative energies like wind, solar, and hydrogen technology. They're less supportive of spending on mass transit, mm-hmm. But they're more supportive of nuclear power. So, mm-hmm.
So Leah, what aspects, before we go here, we have just a couple minutes left, what aspects of public opinion about global warming are you at the Pew Research Center measuring next?
The next thing that we'll come out with this month is sort of a priorities list. Every January we ask the public to rate what should be a priority for the president and Congress this year. And so global warming, energy, environment are all on that list. That's sort of our immediate next steps. And, as things continue to develop, we sort of always have an eye on the news media and things, what's going on in the debate to see what we'll be polling next. But, we will continue to update our basic trends that I've shared with you today as well.
Leah Christian, senior researcher at the Pew Research Center for People and the Press, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
And as we wind up our conversation, I'd like to get some concluding remarks from our guests who have been with us the entire hour, Jerry Schnorr, Gene Talkley, and Laura Jackson. In light of what we've just heard about the divide between the public's perceptions of global warming and its causes, go back to this idea of political will. What are your thoughts when you think about the future of taking action against greenhouse gases, Gene Talkley, and the politics, especially when we look at the shift toward the GOP in Congress, both at a national level in Washington, also at a state level?
Well, an economist once told me that if you want to find out what people believe, you should just watch how they spend their money. And so that's the tack that I've taken in my discussions in public presentations and so on, to look at how farmers and Iowans are spending their money. And we see that in many cases they are spending it on adapting to climate change. Maybe they don't realize it, but that's part of what we're trying to articulate in this report as well, that it's already happening and we just need to be mindful of that and be intentional about our managing of climate change in the future.
Laura, final words from you.
2 years ago, Cedar Falls had a freak windstorm in August, and our public utility spent $6.9 million cleaning up the mess. Any individual storm is not directly tagged to climate change, but we know the trend is towards higher frequency of those things. So, yeah, we're spending money on climate change that we could be spending on other things. And I think regardless of whether the political will is there or whether people agree or disagree, quote unquote, with the science, the storms are going to keep coming and we'll keep having to clean up the mess.
Jerry Schnorr, a few seconds for you. Final words?
Final words is that whatever natural warming you believe is occurring, we are adding to it. That's without a doubt. And so the policy recommendations in this report, I think, are only prudent and make common sense for us to respond to that change.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much for joining us, Jerry Schnorr, Gene Talkley, and Laura Jackson. It's been a pleasure having you with us this hour. The Exchange is produced by Alex Hoyer and Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Mitchell Schmidt. Technical support from Dennis Reese. In Ames, we had help from Nathan Clagy. In Cedar Falls, Phil Moss helped us out. And the executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Jeff Schmidt. Podcasting and on-demand audio available by going to iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. Join us again tomorrow. And of course, it's Politics Wednesday. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.